Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
In Paul Rudnick's new work, a series of five monologues called Coastal Elites, the first character that we meet is Miriam Nessler. Miriam is someone New Yorkers will immediately recognize, both the actor who plays Miriam, the one and only Bette Midler, but also the character of Miriam. She's a retired Queens public school teacher, a New York Times devotee, a woman who profoundly and proudly wields her public radio tote bag like a gladiator shield, and someone who is both appalled by her hate for the current president, but also fueled by it. After a run-in with a MAGA hat wearer, Miriam lands in an interrogation room at the police department, and that's where we meet her and hear her story. Bette Midler shares Miriam's passion for her work, the city, and for politics. Later this month, she'll be playing Bella Abzug in The Glorias, the new Julie Taymor film about Gloria Steinem. In October, she'll be marking the 25th anniversary of her organization, the New York Restoration Project, which is the only citywide parks conservancy. And currently, her Twitter feed is full of cultural analysis in the way that only Bette Midler could deliver. Coastal Elites can be seen on HBO, and Bette Midler joins us now. Bette, thank you for being with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
I mentioned your Twitter feed because anyone who follows you, like so many of us, you were working through your thoughts about the passing of Justice Ginsburg on Friday. Now that you've had a few days to sit with the news, what are your thoughts today?
Well, I think it was the passing of a giant, and I think that this race to fill her seat is just unconscionable. I can't believe it. I can't believe it's happening. I mean, as soon as it was announced, I knew that was they were going to start to scramble, but it's so obscene the way they're behaving. I find it obscene, especially since, you know, Mitch McConnell was so insulting to Mr. Obama over Merrick Garland. I mean, it was appalling what he did, appalling. And every person of decent conscience was appalled, and yet it didn't stop him. He's like the rest of them. He's just like Trump. He has no moral compass at all, and it's win at all costs. But win for what? He wants to go back. He wants to go backwards. What is it he wants so badly? He wants, you know, never mind. I really do lose it.
No, don't apologize. I asked the question, and it's really helpful when we think about your character in Coastal Elites. We'll talk about Miriam a little bit more. But originally, Rudnick had written this to be staged at the Public with performances filmed for HBO. When did you get involved with the original project?
Well, he called me when I was Jay Roach and Paul Rudnick were in, the main movers of this piece, and they called me when I was making The Politician for Ryan Murphy and Brad Falchuk, and they wanted to know if I could get if I could do it at night when I was working after I was done with my job, my day job, and I couldn't do it. I was just jammed, and I was really, really tired. And it was the dead of winter, and I was miserable. So I said no, and it sort of drifted away. But then after we shut down two episodes before the end. After we shut down, they came back and said, well, we've been speaking to HBO, and they're very interested in doing this as filmed monologues. And I thought, well, that makes a lot of sense. And I had a lot of confidence in my own ability to do that because I had spent a year doing an hour and a half monologue on Sue Mangers, who was a great old character out of Hollywood, an agent with an axe to grind. I had done her seven shows a week with her for a year, so I felt that I could do a monologue, and I was very excited about the writing because I felt that he had channeled a bunch of things that I had said, and I also felt everybody that we know was in the same boat. We were all filled with the same outrage. And we had no outlet for it. You know, things that we had been brought up to believe would never ever happen in a country as strong and as vibrant and as well constructed through the Constitution as our country. And this is something that we all believed, and then to see it dismantled piece by piece, brick by brick, every day, you know, another chunk of it goes down, like that wall that those silly people built in Texas. I mean, it's so strange. to be this old and to have lived through 70 years of, you know, basic, I can't really say it was all peace all the time, but it wasn't a dismantling of the entire country and everything that the country is built on. All the principles that the country is built on. So, of course, people my age are in incredible distress because we're coming to the end of our existence, and we don't want to leave the country and we don't know what we've done. We don't know what to do to salvage it. There, I've answered your question.
At the very beginning, we see it starts 5 heart-tugging monologues appears on screen, and then that's erased, and we see a few more edits before it lands on 5 desperate confessions from people barely coping with the new normal. Now, Miriam from the jump, she seems like an open book, but the word confession kind of suggests a secret, like something that you have to, you know, tell because you have to tell on yourself. What is Miriam's secret? What is she telling on herself in her monologue?
Miriam's secret, I don't think it's so much as Miriam's secret is that she believes that this man has killed her husband. And I know people to whom this has happened. I know I have a friend who says that he killed my husband. So I think that's her secret. And she doesn't want it. I think it's such an outrageous accusation to make, and yet she lived it, so she believes it.
In the monologue, just to catch our audience up, she's discussing how her husband was in the hospital and he wakes up for a brief moment thinking that Hillary Clinton won. And after he's informed that Trump won, he dies.
He has a heart attack and he dies. Yes. But I think that these two people, Miriam and her husband, are both people who are active. They're civic minded. They're people who try to do good for other people and good in the world, and I think to have their entire set of beliefs tossed into the garbage disposal is very, very hard on them, on both of them. And I think the outrage and the despair, it's not a secret. It's no secret. But I think in a funny way, you know, I'm trying to re-answer that question. Does she have a secret? I think it's something that she doesn't talk about, but I do believe that what I said earlier is the truth.
My guest is Bette Midler. She is starring in HBO special presentation of Coastal Elites. How did, in the course of working on this, I want to go back to the process a little bit. How much did Miriam's monologue change over the course of working on this project?
Well, there were things that I didn't think were proper. Mm-hmm. There were certain words that I thought were improper, and there were certain believe it or not, because what's left, everyone would think, oh my goodness, listen to how she's cursing. But she says, I've never talked like this. I've never spoken like this in the monologue. She says, I don't know, I wake up every morning and all I can do is curse, which I think is really quite funny. There were a few words that I didn't like, and there were a few disparaging remarks about, you know, different segments of society that I thought were inappropriate, because I think my feeling about the coastal elites is that it's not just for the coastal elites. Mm-hmm. This piece is for humanity. This piece is for the human being in all of us, whether it's a big human being and a big heart, or whether it's a small human being, you know, dying to get out of some other, you know, set of beliefs that's squashing it. Conscience is our only guide in this life, I don't know where this is going.
Wherever you wanted to go.
Wherever
you wanted to go.
So coastal elites is not just, it's for coastal elites is not just for coastal elites. It's for everybody across the country. You know, if you call yourself the flyover states or the southern states, you know, or the Midwest or the Northwest. I mean, I think it's for people who have a conscience. It's for people who are worried. It's for people who allow a little bit of worry to gnaw at them. You know, why are there 40 million people unemployed? Who are they? Do I see them on the street? Why are there so many homeless people all over Westwood in California? What's going on? What is a tent city? I'll tell you what a tent city is. A tent city is a Trump city or a Bill Barr city. Mm-hmm. That's what that is. That's a complete mismanagement, lack of ability, ineptitude. And it's outrageous because we put a man on the moon. We put a man on the moon, and that was 50 years ago, more than 50 years ago. So how come we couldn't get PPE to these people? Mm-hmm. It's embarrassing. It's humiliating. And I think people wake up to this. It's not. I don't think it's a new normal. I don't think it's a new normal. I think it's desolation. And, of course, people are terrified by desolation.
You know, there's also just this really sort of interesting, in the way you play it and the way it's directed, this sense of introspection from Miriam. I want to play a clip because she's really, not only is she disturbed about what's happening outside in the world, she's disturbed about what's happening inside of her a little bit. Let's take a listen to this clip from Coastal Elites.
I mean, I never felt like this. I never went to bed in a rage and woke up having a panic attack. I didn't spend every day in anger and dread, and I didn't hate those other people. Those people from Nebraska and Ohio and Alabama. I mean, I'd fly over them, but I'd wave. And when they came to New York City to visit, I'd give them directions to Lion King. I mean, I'd start to recommend the new Sondheim. They say, who's Sondheim? I'd say, have fun with the puppets. I mean, maybe we weren't buddies, but we didn't despise each other. That's what he did. Oh, God. I'm doing it. The fury, the agita, the constant need to shake my copy of the New York Times and scream at it, how could you let this happen? Not the art section.
That was Bette Midler from Coastal Elites. So we see Miriam go from angry to sad to cracking jokes to being pensive. Was that all on the page? And then once it was taken off the page in the hands of Jay Roach, what kind of conversations did you have?
You mean in terms of how in terms of dynamics? Or
yeah, exactly. Especially with a monologue.
Well, I believe that it was built into the script. Mm-hmm. There were things about it that I felt needed to be hammered. And I felt that the idea of her saying, I thought they were okay. I liked them. You know, I liked them. I liked the people from Alabama and Nebraska. Now I don't like them anymore. I mean, that she feels real sorrow about mm-hmm. that, I believe. She feels real sorrow about that because she felt that she was part of a community, the American community. And the American community and the concept of Americans being of the American community and the community living the American experience, that this has been shattered. And this, I think, is the most devastating thing to her. In terms of dynamics, it was very hard because it was I was in a room all by myself, mm-hmm. staring at a green light. I've never been in a situation where the whole crew was outdoors and I was the only person in the room.
Wow.
So I was, I did have a computer with Paul Rudnick, the writer, on it. And I had a computer with Jay Roach on it. They were two separate talking heads. And the pressure or the challenge was to get from yes, officer, I know what I did, and I know why I know why that man pressed charges. To get from the first line to the very end, I'm the wall, lock me up. To get there in one take, because there are no cuts in that. And so there's the challenge of memorizing it, and also the challenge of not being swept away by it. And I'm not sure that I was not swept away by it. There were times when I completely lost myself. Hmm. And I, in a way, it's very, very exciting, but in a way, it's kind of terrifying too, because you know you have to get back to certain beats that have to be hit. And you know that it can't all be at one level. So it's challenging in the way that a beautiful opera or a song, a beautiful ballad is challenging. The way Frank used to, Frank Sinatra would sing this note really loud, this lyric really loud, and this lyric really soft in order to express what the song is about. Yes, I found it very musical. Paul is a very, very musical writer.
My guest is Bette Midler. The name of the piece is Coastal Elites. It's on HBO. It's a special presentation. You know, there's a sense of, in that one clip we played, in your mind, does Miriam have a self-awareness? Like she's Absolutely. Saying she wants to love, she says she wants to love these people, but she's, you know, give them the elbow about the Lion King.
Well, I do believe that she does have a sense. Well, she has a sense of humor is what she has.
Okay.
And she has a sense of awareness, and she's quite mischievous, actually. Mm-hmm. I don't think you can be a teacher in the Queens school system for 45 years without being a little bit of a mischief maker. And so I think that those things are possibly and probably what make her such so adorable in a way.
Yeah.
And also so... So recognizable. There are people who have very strong opinions who you don't agree with, but they're so damn funny about it that you can't not love them. You know, there is that thing about having a sense of humor that it's not papers over, but smooths over a lot of wrinkles in the social fabric. You know what I mean?
I do. When I saw Miriam, I thought, like, Miriam is, I'm sure, I was like, this woman is called this show. I know this woman. She's completely, you know, the WNYC listener, the smart, savvy, funny,
tell
it like it is, New
the
Yorker.
The West Sider.
Yeah. Before we go to break, I do want to ask you about your fellow Coastal Elite performers, Dan Levy, who won an Emmy for Best Writing last night, and in a speech, and he shouted out Issa Rae, who's also in Coastal Elites. I'm curious, what is it about this next generation of writers that you admire?
Well, I have to say, they speak English in a different way. Hmm. And their sound of their voices is different. Their use of slang is completely different. There are a lot of words, a lot of things, a lot of expressions that they use that are completely foreign to me. I'm 74, and I think I do try because I know, because language is part of my job.
Mm-hmm.
So I do try, but a lot of it is new. It's like the computer. It's like learning the computer is so deep and so dense that at my age, for me to learn, I mean, even to keep up with it and all the new iterations of it, it's very, very hard.
Interesting.
It's really hard, but I have to say I admire it. Because it's energetic, a lot of it is very well-meaning and mm-hmm. smart. A lot of it is very, very smart. I love those two characters. I loved Issa Rae, and I thought Dan Levy is absolutely fabulous. I thought he was great on Schitt's Creek. I thought the writing was great on Schitt's Creek. I howled. I loved mm-hmm. it. I was so pleased that they won. I mean, all of them are so good.
Yeah.
Kristen Deaver, is it Kirsten Deaver? Kirsten Deaver?
Caitlin.
I'm sorry?
Caitlin Deaver.
Caitlin. We only met one time during the rehearsal. We had a Zoom call for a rehearsal, and everybody was so good on it. Sarah Paulson was on it, too. And mm-hmm. so I have tremendous respect for all those people. And I liked... I was very pleased to be among them. I mean, the only thing, if we're going to talk about young people, my only pet peeve is the vocal fry. I can't stand it. I just cannot stand it. I can't stand it. And you hear it all the time on certain, you do hear it a lot.
Oh, yes.
And NPR is not immune to it. I got to say. I'm going to be honest. I was going to write your letter, but I'm not going to write your letter. I'm going to full bore. That vocal fry has got to stop. You have got to get someone in there with that old book that you could tell them about how to speak. Are you? I know you're laughing.
I'm right? smiling, but the thing is, I'm smiling while I'm laughing.
Do you believe it's true, though?
I'm going to take the fifth because I'm going to take the fifth for my colleagues. Everybody's trying hard. That's what I'm going to say.
I worry about it, and I worry about podcasts. I have a hard time listening to podcasts because the voices are too, they're not modulated. They're like, it's flat. It's too flat with no modulation, you know, no highs, no lows, just like monotonous, and everything ends with a question. I mean, I don't know. I'm an actor. What can I say? I'm an actor and a bitch. What can I say?
You can say a lot.
My
guest is Bette Midler. We've been talking about Coastal Elites. After the
my
break,
horrible guest is Bette Midler.
Oh, no. Are you kidding me? This is a joy.
Oh, my God.
This is my kind of guest, my kind of day. We're talking about the New York Restoration Project after a quick break. This is All of It.
Great. Thanks.
This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. My guest this hour is Bette Midler. So, Bette, in October, your organization, the New York Restoration Project, is celebrating its 25th anniversary. That's so exciting. How are you celebrating?
Well, we're doing a virtual Halloween. Halloween is the name of our gala. We can't do a gala this year, mm-hmm. So we're doing it virtually, of course. And it's going to be a full script with guest stars, and the theme of it is Hocus Pocus. The movie that I made 27 years ago with Sarah Jessica Parker and Kathy Najimy, which has turned into this gigantic cult favorite mm-hmm. All across the globe. And that's our theme. And we're going to, we're inviting people to come to buy tickets at our website, www.nyrp.org. Although we have not announced yet, we won't announce until Wednesday, so don't go in yet. But I tell you, the group has been fantastic. In 25 years, we've picked up, you know, hundreds of thousands of tons of garbage. We've restored a lot of parks. We've built parks. We've educated kids. We've improved. We've grown food. We've distributed food. We have given new life to decrepit blocks and old schoolyards and old churchyards and NYCHA housing and all this sort of thing. And I tell you, it's been great. It's been great. Because everybody has a clean, green, open space is a right, mm-hmm. Not a privilege. That's our motto.
And so important, as we've all discovered since the pandemic,
absolutely.
The ability to be outside, even if it'd be 6 feet apart, to enjoy the outside and to see other human beings.
Exactly.
Before I let you go, I have to ask you about playing Bella Abzug in the film The Glorias, which comes out on Prime at the end of the month. Such an important person to New Yorkers. Her campaign slogan, a woman's place is in the House of Representatives. We talk about the hats, sort of the caricature of her, but I want to know how you would describe her and how you wanted to play her.
Well, I thought she was a ball of fire. I thought she was a force of nature. And I there's a documentary floating around that's unfinished on her, which is a little bit mm-hmm. Too bad because it's terrific, and I think with some funding, it could get made. I saw it, and I saw things about Bella that I did not know about. I did not know about previously. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, she was so irritating to the men in the house. She was such an irritant because, first of all, she was hilarious. Secondly, she was brilliant. She knew the law inside and out. She could puncture an argument. She could see the ridiculousness of things that her colleagues were saying, and she would just lay out their silliness, and it infuriated them, and they really wanted to get rid of her. And in the end, they redistricted her, they changed her district from the Upper West Side, from the Village, and from the Village, the East Village, and I think part of the Upper East Side, they changed it to the West Side. And, well, there was some kind of gerrymandering going on. And they put up Moynihan in front of her. Now, you know, I don't have anything against Moynihan, perfectly nice guy, but he was no Bella. He just was no Bella. He really wasn't. She was sharp as a tack, and she was beloved. And the idea that they would pull these dirty tricks, that's the part that, you know, most Americans don't realize how much dirty tricks there are.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, when I read Mark Twain thought they were all so awful. And he has hundreds of quotes about how dreadful politicians are. Well, I never thought that was true. I never thought that was true until I started really digging in and realized this stuff is filthy. It really is. They went out of their way to obstruct Bella's progress and to put obstacles in her way. And eventually they finally got rid of her. So I think it was a sad ending to a brilliant life.
There's something interesting happening in the culture. Films like The Glorias, Mrs. America, Even thinking about Ruth Bader Ginsburg and all the work she did before the Supreme Court, all those extraordinary yes. cases, this time in the late yes. 60s and the 70s and the women's movement, why do you think that is landing today?
I think because it's taken 50 years for people to actually internalize it, realize what the story was, realize that somewhere there was a scam or a con, and do the research and put the piece together and sell it and have it made. It's taken that long, 50 years of introspection, really, truly. I mean, people, these are stories that were not told at the time, the same way the slave stories were not told at the time, and that's 400 years. Those stories were never told. Those stories were told, started being told in the 1840s and the 1850s. I mean, nobody, people didn't know, you know? And these are these stories have a way of turning into snowballs, and pretty soon everyone is at the library doing their research or a version thereof.
Right. So, well, people knew, you know what? People knew, but the people who knew didn't have the power to bring it to the mainstream.
Yeah, they didn't have, they also didn't, they couldn't, they didn't write, you know, they might have known, you know, they might have known consciously, but they didn't write it down, or they couldn't sell the book. I mean, it's so deep. Mm-hmm. It's so deep. Sometimes I guess you think that it's the powers that be that allow the stories to get out, because the stories become history. And now I think that the time has come that people want to know just who really was Phyllis Schlafly. What was she? I remember, I mean, I lived through those days, and I was in the gay community with a, you know, as an entertainer in the baths. And I remember the commotion that this woman made, and how she made people feel, how she made that community feel. I remember it because I was there. I watched it. And so 50 years later, for someone to actually say, you know, this person did this to us, you know, it's just, maybe it's just the times. Maybe people are just confessing a lot. Maybe people are so tired of being beaten down. I don't know. I'm no seer. I'm no prophet. But it does seem to me that all these stories were lurking, just waiting to be told.
Something I'm not sure people know about you, people close to you would know this, obviously, but you have your own production company, and you've had it since 1985. And that's at a time when few women were able to do that. It was lucrative on top of it. You were able to produce some really good work. Mm-hmm. What did having this production company enable you to do in your career, and what do you think you were able to change?
Well, I will say, I think it was, what did the production company, what did I change? Well, I think I, let me be quite honest with you. Out of 80 projects that I submitted, that my production company submitted to the studio, we got one made. Hmm. So I'm not sure that my track record was so great. It was Beaches. It was good. Oh, and then we did Man of the House, which was not so great. I think we did Yaya Sisterhood. So it was spotty. It was spotty. But I think it encouraged other women to take a shot, really, to make it part of their deals. If I was one of the last people who had a contract with the studio. I was a 10-year contract with the Walt Disney Studios. And part of my contract was that I insisted upon having this production company because I felt that we needed the support. But in those days, you weren't exactly welcomed. I remember saying to this one gentleman who was in production, we really should do more musicals. And he said, okay, familiarize myself with musicals. I'm saying, this guy's got a studio job and he doesn't know what a musical is. So we arranged for a screening of the Wizard of Meet Me in St. Louis. So we're watching the movie, and he turns to me and he says, "Wow, that girl's good. Who's she?" It was Judy Garland. Okay.
Oh my.
Yeah. Well, that was my life. That was my life. I don't put them down. I don't put them down. I'm glad I did it. I learned a lot. They learned a lot. I think there was a certain amount of encouragement for other women to say, I think that we could, you know, I think we could do this. If we have the numbers, if we have the money, if we hire the right people, we can do this. I think it was that encouragement. And I think that's really all people need, you know, that, that infrastructure, that support.
Bette Midler,
do I sound better?
You sound realistic. You sound like the real thing. You sound like somebody who would be great to sit down and have a glass of wine with someday.
Oh, I love that.
Bette Midler, thank you so much for being with us. And thanks for all the work you do on behalf of New York and our green areas. We really, we appreciate it. We appreciate you.
Listen, I love New York. It's a great town. And I don't want anyone to think that it's time to give up on it. It's time to come back. And build back better. Okay.
Bette, thanks a lot.
Bye.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.